Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Survival Jobs, a podcast in collaboration with Broadway World and with the Broadway Podcast Network. We're here in our season three. We're so happy. Thank you for listening, survivors. My name is Samantha Dawn Tutsalo, and this is my amazing co-host, Jason A. Coombs. Jason, happy season three, episode two. How are you feeling?
Hey, as you guys can hear, I have a bit of a cold. I'll try to push through the past couple of days. It's fine. I just, would you like a mic check now? Should I just go into my mic check?
Yeah, let's go. Check one, two, three. This is Benny on the dispatch. Yo, anyone? Our Broadway fans will know what that's in reference to.
Yeah. I know. I just hate not being 100%, not being able to give 100% when we do our shows. And I sound like I just chewed glass for breakfast. But I'm just trying to be optimistic. This world is crazy with everything going on. But we try to shed some light, right? We try to be the positive energy that we want to be. We want to give out, because things are crazy in this world. My heart breaks for Gaza and Congo and Sudan and all the places that are suffering in the world right now. But that's why we do this show, right? This is our way of spreading a little bit of sunshine. So I'm trying to keep that in my head as I'm suffering through this cold as well.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're on the brink of cold season being over, Jay. So I think you're close. Jason, did you watch the Oscars?
I did. I did get to watch. I will just say how incredible Ryan Gosling is, and that performance, was like one of the best live performances on the Oscars ever, probably. The energy, how he reworked the crowd, he gave like an ode to Marilyn Monroe, right? In Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, right?
I'm just kidding. Anywhere else I'd be, is it my destiny to live and die a life of blind fortune?
I loved it. He's a star. He's like one of the last incredible Hollywood stars that we have.
He really is. That performance was amazing. I will be honest and say I did drink a lot of red wine at the Oscars. Every year I attend, my friend Lisa, shout out to Lisa Bacuzzi. She always hosts us for the Oscars, and she does a really beautiful cheese board. And then she gave me a lot of wine. And so I definitely lost the ballot. She prints out the Vanity Fair ballots. I definitely lost the ballot. I was slacking on seeing movies this year, I will say. I saw Killers of the Flower Moon and I saw Barbie, and that is about it. So I was really, really rooting for Lily Gladstone. I hear Emma. I did not see Poor Thing, so I cannot comment my opinion. I heard she was phenomenal, and I heard she did deserve to win. I will share something that Robin DeJesus, one of our past guests and a good friend of the show, said to me, and I was like, it so tracks, because I watched Killers of the Flower Moon with him and I was like, Robin, I'm so disappointed about Lily. Like, obviously it was all the only thing I saw and I was rooting for her. And he said, you know what, Samantha, I want Lily to win when she's giving a performance that's not about her people being oppressed. I want her to win when she's doing work that doesn't revolve around her race or her heritage being targeted, which is such which was something interesting that he said. And I just wanted to share that.
I mean, that would be nice, but we know what the reality is. It's like those roles. I mean, we're talking, I think, is it Daveen? The wonderful Black woman who won Best Supporting Actress for The Holdovers, which was amazing. I would definitely recommend seeing that right away. But no, for performers of color, we don't get those roles. That's why Angela Bassett was like so, I think, like her hurt last year when she didn't win for Wakanda Forever, because like, when is she going to get a role like that again, especially at her age? And not saying she's old or anything like that, but it's just the reality for women of color who are in these roles. Like Emma Stone, love her to death, and she was amazing in what's her movie called again? I lost some music.
Poor things.
She was amazing in that, but she's gonna get another role as a leading star tomorrow. You know, she has nothing to worry about. Lily Gladstone, when's the next one? Is she gonna get a juicy role?
Well, hopefully there's some change, and her talent is so great. And I hope that there is a producer and a director out there who says, let's go, Lily. Because I do want to say, in her high school, Lily won, most likely to win an Oscar.
Superlatives.
Yeah. And so it's coming. I am a Lily Gladstone fan now after seeing that, and after just seeing her do this press tour and just seeing the way she carries herself. I really am a Lily fan, so I'm here for it.
And I hope Greta Gerwig calls her. Let's make sure we're like opening up the roles for women of color. You know, people in power need to remember that. It's a question that we ask a lot on the red carpet. Like, we gotta make sure we're opening pathways for people of color to get these roles. So,
Greta Gerwig, if you're listening, please call Lily Gladstone immediately.
Immediately. Inspiring. One last thing. This is on the topic of the gentleman who wrote American Fiction. His first name is Cord. I don't know his last name right now. Guys, I'm on this Mucinex. It's not an ad. I just drink a lot of it. But he also wrote about, like, create. He said that, you know, there's lots of $200 million films out there.
I understand that this is a risk-averse industry. I get it. But $200 million movies are also a risk, you know? And it doesn't always work out, but you take the risk anyway. And instead of making one $200 million movie, try making 20 $10 million movies. Or 50, right? 50 $4 million movies. Like, you can, there are so many people. I just feel so much joy being here. I mean, I felt so much joy making this movie, and I want other people to experience that joy, and they are out there, I promise you. The next Martin Scorsese is out there. The next Greta's out there, both Gretas. The next Christopher Nolan's out there, I promise you. They just want a shot, and we can give them one, and this has changed my life. Thank you.
That's also give an opportunity for younger performers and producers and writers to get their stories out there, right? If we have 50 $4 million films, how incredible would that be? Give opportunities. Don't just make it like a message that was in 2020 and it goes away. Let's keep like a fire on these people's asses and like really make it happen. There's mad creatives out there who aren't getting the opportunity, who should get the opportunity to create and have a platform to create. So that's it. I know I sound like shit right now, so I'm sorry to be talking so much sound like this.
You sound great. And you know what? That's life. People get sick and we still have shit to do and we're keeping it going. Boom.
So, let's go to shit.
Okay, guys. So our season 3, episode 2 guest is Shares Alataha. My gosh, I love this girl. I met her this past year through another friend of the show, Crystal Joy Brown. And it was an instant connection of, wow, this is a good person in the industry. And we talked about this a lot I think in our press for the party of just like keeping the people in the industry that are good and that are supportive and that are going to uplift you, keep them, because unfortunately there are, you know, it's anything in life. There are people who are haters and who are going to like spew that judgment, which a lot of my insecurities about that video came from, but that's neither here nor there right now. And then there are the people who are just so genuinely happy for your success and your win. There's enough cake for everyone and shares. My God is one of those people. And what a talent. She's been going on. She's in Merrily We Roll Along right now, playing various roles through the ensemble. But she's been going on so much for Mary. And I have heard run to the theater when she goes on because I hear she's incredible. So, guys, shares. This is going to be a great episode.
It is. Should we do her bio?
Yes. Shares, which is pronounced like more than one share, is an Iranian-American actor, singer, and vocal coach. Originally from Southern California, Shares is based in Manhattan and is currently appearing in the hit Broadway revival of Stephen Sondheim and George Firth's Merrily We Roll Along, alongside Jonathan Groff, Daniel Radcliffe, and Lindsay Mendez. She has been seen on stage at the Kennedy Center, Lincoln Center, Ars Nova, as La Lume in Kismet, directed by Lonnie Price for Santa Barbara Symphony, Aldonza, and Man of La Mancha at Triad Stage, Spring Alive, Dixon Place, the cast album's available, people, and the 2022 Off-Broadway revival of Merrily We Roll Along at the New York Theater Workshop.
She is frequently seen in concerts around New York City and is often part of readings and workshops of new and developing work at theater companies like Playwrights Horizon, The York, and Musical Theater Factory. As a voiceover artist, she has recorded work for Netflix and Age of Learning, among others. Her on-camera work includes appearances on Power Book 3, Raising Kanan, The Detour, The First Wives Club, Three Trembling Cities, Wing Women, Insomnia, and numerous commercials. So yeah, she is incredible, y'all. I loved meeting her. Her energy is just so palpable. She's so kind and loving and just a ray of sunshine. And I think you're gonna fall in love with her if you don't know her yet, because she's great.
Enjoy this episode, everyone. Hello, Shares. Jason and I are talking at the same time because we're so excited.
I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for spending your afternoon with us. Thanks for making time. Thanks for being a tech wizard over there, getting yourself on.
Wizard is definitely not the word.
You did better than me, so I will give you all the credit, Shares. Thank you. Thank you. And congratulations on your Broadway debut in Merrily We Roll Along.
Yes! Thank you so much. It is a very, very dreamy, dreamy Broadway debut.
I mean, that is facts.
It really is. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those weird things where I'm in my 30s and we're told in this industry that, like, you'll go to college and then you'll book a Broadway show and that's it. And if it doesn't happen that way, we're so sorry. And so to it have not, so many no's had to happen for this yes to happen. And it just kind of feels very meant to be. It's really exciting.
Oh, I love that. And you know, that's that thought of like, by the time you're 30s, it's so, you know, they say it in general, but so specific to women. So like, as a strong ass woman, like, in Merrily We Roll Along, I am here for it. We are your cheerleaders. You are amazing in the show. We're going to talk so much about it as we get on, but I did just want to say, like, fangirls of Shares over here.
Fangirls of you two.
Oh, that's sweet.
Well, let's go back a little bit, Shares. Can we start with what our show is about, survival jobs, and share your favorite survival job you've had in your past?
Oh my gosh, I have had so many. Yeah, I worked for years in cocktail bars in New York City. And
as a server?
As like everything. I hosted, I served, I bartended. Yeah, I had done a show like, I don't know, maybe like 10 years ago, I did this show and it ended up not being like a great experience. And I kind of figured, I was like, I kind of think I need to step away from theater for a second, but I also need to pay my rent. And I reached out to the fabulous Michelle Ragusa, who, listeners, if you don't know her, look her up and obsess over her. She is an incredible leading lady of Broadway, and we had worked together, and her fabulous husband, Tom, was the head bartender at this gorgeous bar called Dear Irving. I love them so much.
Yes,
I love Dear Irving. The best. The most beautiful.
That's one of the last bars I went to before the pandemic. I remember that specifically. Yeah, in early March.
Incredible.
Those cocktails are a piece of art.
They truly are.
So good.
Yeah, so I reached out to Michelle and I was like, I know your husband works at a bar. I know nothing about bars. Do they need anyone to work there? And they kindly and blindly hired me with no experience. And I thought, this ignorant dum-dum that I was. And I was like, it's just a serving job. How hard can it be? And it was just this eye-opening experience to this whole other world in New York that I kind of just fell in love with. And I ended up working there for 3 years as I took a pause from the theater and entertainment world. I did like little jobs here and there. I like shot some commercials and I booked a little TV job here and there. But theater, I really was not doing because I just... the spirit was not with me at that moment in time. But it became my home and my family. And it was this exciting moment of like, oh, here's all these things that I love about theater, where it's like people who are super passionate, people who are the best at what they do, people who have so much knowledge about this thing that they love and they have dedicated their life to it. It was so amazing and exciting and like intoxicating to be around that. And I met some of my closest friends, some of my favorite friends, my best friends are through that time of my life. And then it set me up when I finally kind of had this moment of like, I think I'm ready to, you know, get back into theater. And if I stay at this job, I'll never do it because I love them too much. Like I'll never be able to just audition and like leave them on a whim because I got a job that starts tomorrow. I care too much about being here for them. So I had to like put that chapter to bed. And again, they're still, you know, some of my closest friends, and I spent New Year's Eve with people from there. They've all come to see the show. It's just, it's so special. And so I do, I love a survival job. I think it is so important to us and our lives, and it just enriches us. It's great.
I love that story. Yeah. Jason and I were literally around the corner. What years were you at Dear Irving?
I was there 2015 to 2018.
Yeah,
we were right around the corner in our survival job. And I think that's
what was yours?
We were there at Javelina Tex-Mex right there on 18th between Park and Irving. like literal... in our survival job, yes. In another world, so close to each other. That is so cool. And here we are all together.
I love it.
Did you ever go to that restaurant?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That queso. I mean, shout them out. I don't think Jason and I are as passionate about that survival job as you are about yours, but we will say that queso was...
No, but I think that's so true because, like... honestly, some of my good friends, just people I met working in restaurant industry, I think you do because of the high stakes and the pressure and just the camaraderie. You have to kind of become a family in a way, right? Do you watch The Bear?
I saw literally this past Monday night, I went to dinner at a fabulous restaurant called Chouquette in Chelsea, if you haven't been. And my dear friend Paige manages there. And we met and became friends because we used to work the dreaded Saturday night shift together at Dear Irving. And it was like 12 hours long, and it was just these people who would show up and treat us terribly. The customers, some of them were really nice, but there were some real just monsters. And we were just in the trenches together, and we have this like forever bond because we survived that together. And we laugh about it, and we laughed through the night together, and we made it fun for each other. And like, I love her. I will always be her friend. I will always go visit her wherever she is. I just, you know, it just bonds you forever that you survived the survival jobs.
Totally. Yeah, especially the restaurant industry. Some crazy things happen. So Dear Irving was, you know, one of the better ones. Do you have a survival job that was like maybe not so dreamy and lovely? A story even that you want to share? Something crazy that might have happened?
Okay, buckle up. So as actors, we're always in search of like the chupacabra survival job of like, this is the job that's going to pay me so much money, but also require no time or commitment from me so that I can audition and gig and whatever. And I talked to this actor and she was like, I have that job. Do you want that job? I was like, yes. What is it? I need it. And she was like, I work for this company as a matchmaker. And I was like, you can ask any of my exes. Oh. I'm not good at relationships.
Oh my God.
And she's like, you're good. Anyone can do it. And actors are great at it. Do you want to work for this company? And I was like, yeah, okay. I lasted like maybe 6 weeks. I hated it so much. It made me so upset and heartbroken for the state of people looking for relationships in New York City. Because it was like, people were applying for jobs. I would literally get on, it was usually Zoom with a client, and most of my client were men looking to date women. And they would be like, she, you know, has to look like a supermodel. She has to have gotten her PhD at Harvard. She has to live in my exact neighborhood. She has to make this amount of money, da 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 da. And I was just like, is this what people are looking for when they're looking for relationships? This is awful.
I am in shock.
It was insane. And they would give me these crazy like laundry lists of what they wanted in a person, which, yeah, I guess we all have our standards. We all have, you know, what we want. But we also know that if you're sitting across from someone and like the vibe is there and you're just into them, it doesn't matter any of those other things. You're into them. So it's going to be great. And I would get these guys and I would find this, you know, magic unicorn woman who fit the majority of their needs. And they would call me up and I'd be like, how was your date? Did you have a good time? Oftentimes I would send them to Dear Irving.
Yes.
Perfect, keeping it in the survival job family.
Exactly. And they'd be like, I mean, yeah, she, you know, has a PhD from this Ivy League school and she's reading the books that I read and she lives in the neighborhood I like and she does all the things I'm interested in, but I'm going to send you a picture of what I'm looking for. And they would literally send me photos of like Victoria's Secret models. And I was like, sir, you're a 5 on a good day and you want that? How dare you? How dare you turn down the lovely, wonderful, smart, brilliant woman that I set you up on a date with? And I just could not do it. I couldn't hide it on my face how much I hated these men.
I hate them as well, just by hearing just this little snippet of this story. I am also appalled that this job exists. Like, who knew?
It was wild. It was wild. And they also felt like because they had paid money to be on a service versus like swiping on an app, that if you didn't get them exactly what they wanted, you're not doing the job properly. Like it was you, not them. But the best was this guy who sent me this picture. I was like, okay, you want a date that's like a super, super hot chick? You got it. I set him up with a super hot chick. I was like, how was it? And he goes, she left in the middle of the first drink. And I was like, you don't say, really? Because you had nothing in common with this person.
As a man who dates men, we are trash.
But you're in a higher tier. You guys get it.
Barely, yes, but.
Jason, you are not trash. You are the furthest thing away from trash that I've ever come in contact with. This person that was looking to date a supermodel is absolute trash. I bet you this man is still single. Has to be. Or he's dating somebody much, much, much younger than him who has not learned yet.
Exactly.
About things.
A wild ride. And for my own sanity and mental health, I was like, I can't do this. It's too upsetting.
That is upsetting. And I would like to say that is the first in survival jobs history we've heard that job. So you just set a record, a moment in history on the show.
Yes, season 3.
Cool. Season 3 matchmaking. Right, Jay? Nobody else has been a matchmaker.
No. No, I love it. I mean,
my favorite part about this and favorite and like a most appalling part is that we have to do follow-ups. Hello, how was the day? It's like a true sales job.
Yeah.
Checking on your clients.
Literally. It was
unbelievable.
And then sometimes they would judge. They'd be like, I didn't like that bar you sent me to. And I was like, then you plan your date, because you had to plan the date for them as part of the service.
So your matchmaker, event planner, salesperson, checking on the clients.
And mental like, health professional. $100 a week, like something stupid, something that was not enough money to be doing all of this.
Sorry, before we move on, I do just have a question because I am so intrigued by this. So the people wrote to you, where did you get the dates? Like, did women submit? Were they like, I'm also looking? Or was it like a casting call? Like, where did we get the headshots?
They actually, I'm not naming the company because I don't want to like incriminate them, but the company got in trouble because some of the people who worked for them would go on dating sites and like swipe to find dates for their person. And they're like, I'm not looking for me, but are you interested in this person? But they had like a database basically of people who were interested in working with this company. And so you could like go in the database and search like this gender, this age, this area of the world type of thing, and try to like smorgasbord piece together this Frankenstein of a person who matches the needs of your client.
This is wild. Like, do you know there's those jobs in the city where you can just go cuddle somebody? Have you heard about that? This is like giving that kind of vibe to me.
Like, I feel like I would prefer that.
Just some cuddling. I've watched every episode of SVU that I don't think I could go cuddle someone. I would for sure be in the Hudson in the morning. in my mind.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Can we go back a little bit? Yes. Can we go back to the very beginning? Because you grew up in Southern California, right?
I did, yes. Born and raised in Orange County.
Oh, okay. Oh, the OC. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Used to love that show when I was younger. What was the catalyst or like the aha moment where you were like, I have a voice and I want to use it and I like to act and I like to perform? How old were you? What was the catalyst? Give us all the deets.
I always loved music ever since I was itty, itty, bitty. And my parents, they started me on piano lessons when I was like 5 years old. And so there was always music around. Music was very much a part of my everyday life and like development. And I loved it so, so much. I would literally just like sit at the piano for hours and I would get in trouble because I would go to my piano lessons and the teacher would be like, she doesn't know her song. And she'd go to my mom and be like, you are wasting my time with this child. She shows up unprepared. My mom's like, she sits at the piano for hours. What do you mean she's unprepared? But I wouldn't practice the classical music I was supposed to be playing.
Yeah.
I had like the Phantom of the Opera's vocal selections. And I would just sit there and play through that literally all day long. And I loved music. I was obsessed with it. And when I got to high school, I knew I wanted to do something that involved music. I knew I wanted to grow up and do something with music. My mom always likes to tell this story. Both of my parents are Iranian, therefore, I'm Iranian. And yes. It is a very well-known joke in the Iranian community that you grow up to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer. Those are the jobs.
No deviation.
Exactly. And so I'm sitting in the car with my mom one day, and she looks over and she's like, yeah, I just looked over and you had these like tears in your eyes. You were 12 or 13. And I was like, what is wrong? Why are you randomly crying in the car? And I was just like, I don't want to be a lawyer. I want to do music.
I love like, okay. That.
I'm crying from that story. Like, that's so sweet.
And I was just so scared to say it to my parents because I was like, I know this isn't what we do. But they were luckily wonderfully supportive. And they're like, okay, so you like music. We see that. Let's figure this out. All right. And so I went to high school. And I remember I specifically chose the high school I went to, which was Newport Harbor High School in Newport Beach, because I had heard they had a really good theater program. And I was like, okay, they do musicals. That's something with music. They have some kind of art program there. I'd never done any shows or theater before. And I get to the school and they had a fall musical and a spring musical as well. And I remember like right in the beginning, I'm very much an introvert. And if I don't know people, I get very shy. And I was new to this, I had gone to the small private school and I was now in this very, very large public school and I didn't know a lot of people. And I saw that they were auditioning for the fall musical, which was, as much as I love it, unfortunately, it was Once on This Island and it was the like whitest school ever.
Yikes.
We did like the weird junior version of it where they just change everything to classism instead of about.
Oh, yeah. Colorism.
Yes. The early 2000s.
I feel a little cringe, you know?
a wild.
It was a different time.
Very different time, for sure. But I didn't even know what this musical was. I had no idea what it was about. And my mom was like, oh, you said that they're auditioning for the musical, so you're going to audition. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know what this musical is. I feel uncomfortable. I don't know if they like even have freshmen that let them come and do the show. And she was like, you made us bring you to this high school because of theater. You're auditioning. Go. And like my mom basically forced me to go audition. I didn't know what I was doing. I sang Lovely from My Fair Lady because it was like one of the only show tunes I really knew, and I was just like, I don't know what this is. And they kindly cast me, even though they usually didn't cast freshmen. And I so quickly, so instantly just fell in love, became obsessed. My entire life became theater, and I felt like I had to play catch up because everyone was already so obsessed and so just immersed in it. So I would just come home every single day and like listen to a different cast album and be like, this is what they're talking about. Okay, go. This is the one they're talking about. All right, got it. Yes. What was yours? What did you do?
Well, I grew up in like a very inner city, so, and I didn't know much about musical theater. So like all I knew was like they sing opera. Like I was so ignorant. And it wasn't until I went to Performing Arts High School and they played Light My Candle from Rent. And I was like, this is musical theater? And I literally just like went down a rabbit hole and here I am today interviewing Broadway stars.
I know, I feel like Rent, it's like when every theater kid learns Rent is so important.
Yes.
So important.
So important. When I was, for my 16th birthday, that was my 16th birthday present because the tour was coming through LA.
Oh.
And so I asked my parents, I was like, can we get tickets and go see Rent? And I just will never forget how uncomfortable I felt during the orgy scene, sitting next to my two Middle Eastern parents, just like all of us staring straight forward, not moving, not acknowledging each other.
You know,
and then getting in the car and being like, let's talk about anything else, please.
That is so funny because I had a similar experience. I grew up with Robin DeJesus, and so he booked Rent like when I was still in high school. And I remember leaving school early to go see him be Angel with my family, and exactly like the same feeling of like, oh my god, we're here, like somebody from our town is on Broadway, this is amazing. But then it was like the subject of Rent with your mom next to you when you're a child. When you're a child is like, okay, I love theater.
I was like, inside I was having the best day of my life. I was so excited, but I was just like, we'll never speak of this.
We'll never speak of this. I love that we all have a Rent story. That's amazing. So Shares, we do have a lot of younger listeners, a lot of people wanting to pursue art and acting and come to the city and do the thing and dreaming big. Do you have any advice for them on like how to get representation or how to just like hit the ground running? Like, how did you do it? If you could share a little bit about that process, that would be awesome.
I think what was really important for me to learn and to always also just remind myself of even now is very much that idea of like, keep your eyes on your own page, what we learned in school. Because there's a romanticized idea of what we think it's gonna be to pursue this industry, and that like, A leads to B leads to C, da 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 da. But I think it's so personal, and I myself as the prime example, nothing went the way it was supposed to. Nothing was what I expected it to be. And I just had to keep getting creative. And I had to keep reminding myself, if this is what I really want, I have to find a way to make it happen. It's no one else's job to make it happen. It's just me. If I'm not getting, you know, appointments for jobs I want, that's not because my agent or my manager isn't working hard enough. It's because I need to do something more. If I'm not getting that agent, what do I need to do to get that agent? I have to work. Okay, these people don't want to hire me. Maybe I can get in with some new writers and new composers and do their work. And so I think it's just about taking on as much responsibility as you can handle, of course, because we cannot do it alone. We need our people. We need our team.
Yeah.
Our support systems. But yeah, that was always really important to me. Just, it's really easy to get into the comparison game. And it's really easy to say like, oh, that person is getting all of these jobs. That person's getting all these opportunities. Why aren't I? And I'm like, that person is like a tiny Asian soprano. We will never be up for the same job. That's why.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's great. Let that person, they're like, thrive, cheer that person on. I think it's really, really important to learn to cheer on other people in this industry and to be happy for everyone else's success. And I think it really helps just create this like gorgeous abundance mindset, instead of like, if they get it, that means I don't get it and I don't like that. I think if you can switch to, if they get it, am I allowed to curse?
Yes.
Great. Right.
If they get it, fuck yes. Yes, yes, yes. I'm thrilled for them. I'm going to go. I'm going to be there on opening night. I'm going to see them. I'm going to cheer them on. And what's for me is going to find me, and it's going to be fucking amazing and magical and great when it happens. And yeah, I think that is personally for me one of the biggest and brightest takeaways of this entire journey, is just to like throw expectation out the window, stay as positive as you can, and stay as proactive as you can.
I love that.
which leads into our next question, Merrily. What was the audition process like for that role?
The audition process was wild. Again, this whole concept of what is for you will find you. I had been called in for the wonderful, wonderful production for Six a couple of times, and they had reached back around and they're like, we want to bring her back in. And I was like, great, I'm so excited. This is going to be it. This is going to be my chance to like book that big job. This was April of 2022. I got COVID and it was allergy season and I have horrible allergies. I completely lost my voice. Gone. Like, could not speak, let alone sing Six.
You know, because they are belting.
Screaming, glorious, top goddesses, all of that. Anyone who's done that show, Jesus, they're amazing. And I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I like went on vocal rest. I went to my ENT. I went to my voice teacher. I tried all these crazy things. I got my voice back a little bit. I literally tried to do the audition. It is the only time in the history of life where I was like, dancing was great. Singing was trash. Usually it's like, she can't dance. We don't want her. And so I was so heartbroken. I literally in the room like shrugged and was like, I'm so sorry, y'all. I just don't have it today. And they're luckily the nicest casting people ever. We love you, Tara Rubin Casting. You are angels from above. They've been so kind to me. And they were like, we get it. It's okay. And I just remember feeling so dejected and being like, oh, what am I doing? What's going to happen? I just want a job. And like a week later, I get the appointment for Merrily, and it was a self-tape first. And they kind of had Frankensteined the first scene in the show where Mary is at Frank's party for his movie opening, and she progressively gets drunker, has this big fall, screams at him, and ends their friendship. Light, very light material.
Like the show starts with that, and you're like, oh. Awesome.
Cool, that's great.
Yeah.
And I was getting called in for ensemble to cover Mary. And so it was that scene and her solo in Now You Know, her gorgeous portion of Now You Know. And so I finally was feeling better. I put that on tape. A week or so later, I find out you're going in person. And I was like, great. I go in person. And it was both of those, the final scene in the show, the rooftop scene before our time. And I had to sing a section of the opening number. Did that, got a call being like, you have a work session with them. More added material. And then after that was another callback. And I thought that was it. And every single time I went in, they kept like handing me more, like, can you do this song and this scene as well? And this one and this one. And I was just like, mm-hmm, you got it. And I would just go home and stay up all night and not sleep because I wanted it so badly and just try to perfect it as much as I could. And, at the third callback, I figured, I was like, that was it. I remember asking a friend of mine to meet me for dinner afterwards so I could like decompress and hopefully get it off my brain and not upset. Yeah. And I remember telling him like, I think it went as well as it could have. I can't think of anything that I would have been like, oh, I wish I would have done that better or this differently. I'm really happy with how it went. If it doesn't go my way, it's just a puzzle piece that I don't fit into, and that's okay. I can live with that. And then 2 days later, I got a phone call from my managers being like, hey, they need you to come back in one more time. And I had worked so hard on the material literally started crying on the phone. I was like, what else do they need from me? I was like, did they say why? And they're like, no, it's a good thing, Cherish. They just want to see you again. I was like, but why? I
can't. Like, what else could I give? I gave it all.
And I was like, do they have any notes? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, what material do they want to see again? Because at that point I had, I think it was 5 songs and 8 scenes that I had done for them.
Oh my goodness.
Like, they just said, bring everything. And I was like, it's the whole script.
Becomes a one-woman show.
And so I went in one other time, and it was, again, they were always just, it was a dream of an audition room. It was so warm and collaborative, and I think it was something that made every single one of us that auditioned for it say, we really want to do this piece. Like, this seems really great and creative and special. And then it was my least favorite thing to happen, which was a final callback on a Friday, because then you have to suffer through the entire weekend.
The weekend. Without
hearing anything. Oh, jeez.
And so they actually didn't, we kept getting updates throughout that next week being like, no decisions have been made. No offers have gone out. She's still in the mix. We now have to, you know, everything needs to go through the Sondheim estate. So we haven't heard anything yet. And then I actually was in, I had jury duty. And so I was at jury duty and I'm in like the little holding room that they put everyone in. All morning goes by. They send us on like a long lunch break. That all happens. We come back from lunch and they come and they tell our whole room, like, everyone in this room is going to a courtroom and we're going to start questioning you to see if you're going to be like a juror on this case. I was like, okay. We're literally about to walk into the courtroom and I get a call and it's my manager. And I was like, I text him immediately saying, I can't pick up. I'm at jury duty. I'm about to be in a courtroom.
This is so good.
Call me when you're done. And I was like, no.
call you when you're done.
You're like, text me now.
I was like, this is either really good or really bad, and I don't know which.
She's like, guilty. They're guilty. They're guilty. They're guilty. Get me out of here.
I have a conflict with this case, a conflict of interest. I've got to go.
So I go and I have to sit in this room for literally 2 hours.
No.
I can't tell you what this court case was about. I don't even remember anything that happened in that room because my mind was just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And they finally release us. I like run out of this courthouse as fast as possible. I call my manager, Harold, and he answers singing the opening number of Merrily to me.
I have chills.
And I was like, wait, just you have to say the words. Did I get it? And then he was like, you got it. And he was like, why don't you sound excited? And I was like, I'm surrounded by government buildings and police officers. I'm trying not to scream right now.
That is one of the best like booked stories I've ever heard. Not you having to sit through jury duty for 2 hours is like unbelievable
torture.
And I mean, at that time, so you booked it, did you know anybody else in the cast yet? Did you know like Daniel, Jonathan, Lindsay were cast already, or was it all like up in the air?
Dan was in the show. He had already been announced. And then I had heard rumors about John and Lindsay. And then my wonderful Vishal Vaidya, who's in the show, he and I share a manager and we've been friends for a long time. So once we both accepted, they told us about each other being in the show. So we were really excited. But then everyone else was, as we, you know, got to the first day of rehearsal and as the announcements came out, that's how I learned about the rest of our fabulous cast.
As it all rolled along, if you know what I mean. So this is kind of like a few questions in one, so bear with me. So you started the rehearsal process, and I imagine like when you're understudying and covering Mary, you're not rehearsing directly with John and Dan, all right? You're rehearsing with the understudies. So was it nerve-wracking being in the room with them, or like the first time you went on as Mary? And then how you've been going on so much. How has that felt? What has that been like? And then third part of the question, I do follow you on Instagram. You mentioned being Middle Eastern and like coming from this culture, and you're calling your Mary a very specific Mary name, but I'm not going to try to say it and butcher it. So how does that like feel for you to be like, just being who you are, representing your culture in this amazing show and the amazing cast getting to go on? Sorry for all those questions in one, but I just had to do it.
I love it. We luckily have literally the nicest company ever on Broadway. And I'm sure everyone says that. And it's the nice, like, PC thing to say, but genuinely, every single person on that stage is so kind, so open, so supportive. And when I was told I was going to get to go on for the first time with Dan and Jonathan, they were just, they're literally angels, the two of them. It was not about like, this is what I need from you so that my show goes right. None of that. Like, they were just on the ride. They were so down to play. I remember Dan pulling me aside being like, you're really funny. That was fun. Like, that line got a laugh. That was great. And I was like, oh, cool. Okay. He's okay with me like doing my version of it.
Yes. That's
incredible versus just slot in and do the same thing so that, you know, it's always uniform. There's room to play and bring yourself to it, which is such a gift. And Lindsay Mendez is a queen. She's so incredible. I also feel like I have had the gift and the luxury of watching not one, but two rehearsal processes of her processes, whatever the plural of processes.
processes, that works.
Yeah. I've got to watch her develop this character, put it on its feet, and perform it through two of those now. And it's incredible what she does with it, and it was so informative to watch her and just also how she interacts with us as a cast and how she leads has taught me so much. There would be times where she would come, like there was one time in rehearsal we were doing something and she came and literally took me by the hand and said, come here, come watch this because it's a little complicated, you should see how it's done. And I just will never forget those things, because you don't have to do that. Like, that's not required. That's so incredibly kind and so generous and gracious and thoughtful. I hope I can do that for someone one day. And she's so supportive. And, you know, whenever I go on, she always comes and checks in with me and asks, like, did you have a good time? How was it? Did you have fun? Again, she's not territorial. She's not, you know, a diva in a bad way. She's the diva in a good way. She's the diva we all want to be. She's like a leader for the people. She takes care of her cast. We love
her. That's amazing.
And then the, oh yeah, the spelling. That was the third
one, right? Yes, representing, you know.
Yes, so it's Mary Flynn is the character's name. In Iranian culture, there is like a very common name, Mehri, Mehri. And so my wonderful friend, Darius Rose, who some people may know as the fabulous Jackie Cox from RuPaul's Drag Race, she and I have been friends since we were teenagers. We grew up in Orange County together. Darius came to see the show. I know, so exciting. Just amazing. Darius came to see me when I was on and made the joke. And he was like, well, when you're on, it's not Mary Flynn, it's Mary Flynn. And I was like, I love that. So we adopted that. We stole it from Darius slash Jackie. And so it's just, it's really exciting. And it just means the world to me when there are people in the audience. There's kind of two messages I get that always kind of just make me really, really teary. And one is, I've never seen an Iranian woman lead a Broadway show or a musical. I felt so seen. I've never seen that. And the other is the body positivity aspect of it, of like, I've never seen someone with my body type on stage. I've never seen a mid-sized woman as the lead of a musical. That was so exciting. I hope we see more of it. And it's just, I know I always wanted that growing up. I'm sure every single person, it's a very universal thing to want to watch and experience the culture you love, and to see yourself in it is so special. And I'm sure we all have those moments that we can pinpoint exactly what it is that I saw that person and it told me I could do it. For me, it was Sara Ramirez in Spamalot. I saw that when I was a teenager, and I said, if they can do it, maybe I can do it. Like, how exciting. I was like, here's someone whose name isn't super, super easy and whose body looks like mine. Maybe I can do this. And so to give that to someone is beyond a gift.
That's so
thank you beautiful. For sharing all of that. My body is just covered with like chills right now, and I feel like very inspired and emotional. You are amazing. Thank you for being so open in this interview thus far.
Thank you for letting me ramble.
Oh my God, no, we love. And I know we're like talking a lot. I do just want to give a shout out, because I am a Merrily fangirl, to the first time you went on. It was Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. Shout out to that audience member that gave you that. Can you just quickly right share that story? Right? So it was Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, and people were bidding.
Exactly. So at the end of the show, Broadway Cares season, we would almost every show do an auction where in the song Opening Doors, Dan is typing on a piece of paper, and he, because he has to type in rhythm, it's usually just the same two keys so he can stay in rhythm and so that the typewriter doesn't get all jumbled and stuck. But at one point, Jonathan has to come over and type something, and it's in the script, it's meant to be something that like makes him laugh or whatever. And so Jonathan changes it up and will always like attempt to type something that they were talking about, or a funny word or a funny sentence, something to make Dan laugh, a song lyric, whatever. And so for my first show, he wrote fucking shares with like a million Z's. And so they auctioned that off, and they let the audience know very kindly that it was my first time going on. And the amazing, amazing gentleman who won the auction, they would always personalize it and say, like, who do you want us to assign it to? And he said, give it to her.
My body's covered in chills again.
I know. I still get teary.
So good. Yeah. It's such a good.
Literally, like, it's on my dresser. I like literally pop up in the morning every morning and I see it.
That's amazing.
It's the most special. So good. And it just brings a smile to my face every day. I am forever grateful to that gentleman and his generosity.
It's a good reminder. People are so kind out there. I know, like, this world is insane right now, but, like, to know there's people who do, like, something that's like, so personal and so beautiful. And I'm so glad you got that, because I keep hearing how amazing you're doing. We have a common friend who's in the show, and she's always raving about you. So, I don't know.
Shout out, Coach Crystal.
Crystal, Coach KG, KGB.
Oh, I love her. Love.
Yeah. It's so wonderful to meet you and to see, like, how wonderfully kind you are. And I don't know, I'm just rooting for you. I can't wait to see you up there. And I'm so happy that you're killing it, and you deserve this moment. Like, so take it in, bask
Thank
in it.
So much. I hope you all come back to the Hudson. I hope your listeners all have a chance to come down to the Hudson and see us. It's a really, really special show. And I feel a difference when there are creatives in the audience who just feel the story so deeply
and
feel it so personally. I think the show is such a gorgeous mirror. At one point or another, you're going to see yourself in it at some point in someone's journey.
Yes.
And again, that just always feels great to see yourself reflected back to you in a story. It's a wonderful thing.
It is a perfect production. Sorry, Jason.
No. Shout out. You have to go get tickets. Everyone has to see it. But
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I was going to tie this in, because you're speaking about, you know, being your culture, being Iranian-American, and representation, and, like, all those good stuff. Do you have a dream role or collaboration that you would love to accomplish, to perform, to work with someone?
Ooh.
We're big manifestors on this show, so we love asking that question.
I know. Oh, I know. My wishy friends, I see you. Oh, my goodness. Yes. I love comedy. I am obsessed with all things comedy. What I would do to work with, like, Pamela Adlon, Maya Rudolph, Will Ferrell, those are dream people for me. Amy Poehler, dreams. I love. In the theater world, so many people. I was so obsessed with Lisa Peterson's direction of Goodnight Oscar. I would love to work with her at some point. Beautiful. I would love to work with Rachel Chavkin. I would love to work with, oh my goodness, who else? I'm literally scouring my brain. I already work with her, and I want to work with her more. The fabulous Rona Siddiqui, who is a dear friend of mine, a composer, lyricist, librettist, music supervisor extraordinaire. She's incredible, and she's been developing a beautiful show called Salaam Medina, Tales of a Afghan, about growing up half Afghan, half Italian in America.
And wow.
We've been working on it for like 6 years now. We've all been a part of her process and developing it. She's been kind enough to keep us on the journey with her. Oh, what I would give for a full production of that, because it's just my happy to play. Oh, what I would give for a full production of that, because it's just my happy place with that group of people. The fabulous Raja Feather Kelly directs it, and he's just so magical. I would love to work with him again. I've had the pleasure of working with the amazing Lonnie Price before, and he is everything. I would work with him again in a minute. Like, what I would give to work with him again, I would love. I would love to do, like, I always like shows that no one does. I'm like, I want to play Lizzie in 110 in the Shade. Great.
Let's do it. So we have to do it.
I want to play Alonza in Man of La Mancha, which is not comedy, as I just said, I want to do comedy. And I'm like, you're the saddest woman ever in musical.
We're like, hello to any producers listening. Yeah, please produce Sarah's in all of her dream roles. Thank you. This was an amazing interview. We want to thank you again for being so open and just sharing so much with us and our listeners. And this episode's going to be in the beginning of our season three. So what a way to kick off season three. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Hear it and see it. And thank you so much for having me. You both are just yes. Incredible.
We do have one more question, and then we play a super quick, really fun game. We always like to end because we tend to get deep on this show, as you have experienced. So we always love to bring it back to just lightness and joy, even though everything we've chatted about is joy, even though we get a little deep. So you're in the theater 8 times a week doing this amazing show, but do you have anything else in your life that's feeding you artistically? A play you read, a TV show you like to binge, anything like that?
I'm trash. I watch Bravo.
Not trash. Not trash. That is not trash. I
fall asleep to women screaming at each other. It's like my lullaby as I drift off. Yes, I have a very active group chat who are a lot of actors and Broadway folks, and it's us just obsessing over Real Housewives. It's our thing. We love it.
It's escapism, right?
Yes, exactly. That is so good. I have been obsessing, not a competing podcast, just a different podcast. as I said, I love comedy, and Amy Poehler has this hysterical podcast called Say More with Doctor, with a question mark after it, Sheila, because you find out that she doesn't actually have the credentials to be a doctor, so there has to be a question mark whenever you say her name. And it's an improvised podcast, and she plays a couples therapist, and two other amazing comedians will always come on and be the couple that she's giving therapy to. And they're like 20 minute episodes. They're so funny. And then as like a spinoff, I'm also such a huge fan of his, Ike Barinholtz. She's producing his podcast, which is called The Do-Over with Chris Chatham, I think is how you say the last name.
Oh, wow.
And he plays this like Joe Rogan-esque podcast host who's been canceled, and now he's like trying to make a comeback, and he just does it so perfectly. It's so funny, and I listen to it at home when I'm like doing little chores and stuff, or I listen to it on the subway, and I'm genuinely laughing out loud. I love it. They're so brilliant.
Amazing.
I love that.
I love it too. I'm definitely going to listen to that podcast.
It's really fun.
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor? All right, Jay, you want to talk about the game?
Yeah, so this really quick game. It's called, very original title, Merely Co-Star Trivia. So we have four questions for you about your wonderful co-stars. Most of them are true or false. There is a ABCD multiple choice one. And then we have a bonus. So there's no pressure. The big prize is that we are having a little event and we want to invite you to. Oh, only if you win.
Oh.
It's not true.
I already sent her the invite. Yeah. She's already been invited. Sorry, you're not on the list anymore.
You want to take the first one?
Yes, I will. Okay, Shares, are you ready? Your first survival jobs game. True or false? True or false? True or false? Daniel Radcliffe was nominated for a Tony Award for Best Actor for Spring Awakening in 2007.
False.
Ah, correct, it was Jonathan Groff.
My boo. You know?
Okay, question number two. Similar to you, which co-star was also on the show Power Book 3 Raising Kanan? I wasn't going to set up.
Kanan.
Joy Brown.
Yes! Yay! You need multiple choice.
Wow. You don't even need the multiple. You guys were not on the same episode, were you?
No, I believe.
How fun if you were. Kanan
died by the time I filmed my episode.
Yikes. No spoilers, you guys, but.
Sorry.
No spoilers, you guys. Okay. True or false? Lindsay Mendez played Elphaba on Broadway in 2013 through 2014. True or false?
True.
Ding, ding, ding.
I was like, I know she played it. I don't know what year.
You're literally
3 for 3.
Yeah, 3 for 3.
I'm going to that party.
You sure are.
Okay. Number 4, true or false. Your co-star, Reg Rogers, who plays Joe Josephson, is also from Southern California, specifically Newport Beach.
Yes, we're from the same hometown.
Are you?
Yes, we bonded about that off-Broadway.
That's so fun. Oh my God, Cher. So Cher's perfect score so far. 100. So here's your bonus.
Oh my God.
This Survival Jobs a podcast guest made their Broadway debut in Merrily We Roll Along. It's such a trick question.
Me?
Congratulations. You get to come to the Survival Jobs podcast. Season 3 launch. You booked it. Before we go, can you please drop your Instagram, your Twitter, whatever you do on social to the listeners who may not follow you yet. You guys definitely should. She's obviously an icon.
You're so sweet. Thank you. Like a true millennial, I'm just on Instagram. And it's at more than one share, because that's how I explain how to say my name, shares. It's like the singer share. More than one share, C-A-G-R. And that's me on Instagram.
Follow her, people. And if you don't follow us yet, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Survival Jobs Pod, on Facebook at Survival Jobs Podcast. Send us an email. Let us know some feedback, who you might want on the show. SurvivalJobsPod@gmail.com. Follow my boy Jason at Jason A. Coombs. And I am at Sammy Toots. Shares, you're amazing.
You're queen. Wow,
thank you for having me.
Bow down again.
Thank you. Thank you. This is amazing.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.